The Bible Study on KFUO Radio is underwritten by Concordia Seminary, St. Louis, centered in the gospel of Jesus Christ in faithfulness, servanthood, responsiveness, and excellence, Concordia Seminary.
Well, never one for dull form, Paul and I do like to keep you guessing from time to time. This is the Bible Study, Hour 2, known as Ask the Pastor. I'm Roland Lettner. Paul and I are switching up. Paul and John Lukowski are just such a good team. They work so well together, it's hard to say no, you know, when they want to do the Bible study. Well, this is listener-supported KFUO Radio. I'm Roland Lettner. KFUO Radio is a broadcast ministry of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod. Well, during this segment of the Bible study, this is where you get to ask any question you may want. If you didn't get in during the last hour as they started the book of Nehemiah, now is a great time to call in. Or you can email as well, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. I have a stack of stuff here, but, you know, if you want to email it, kfuo@kfuo.org, we can go any direction that you, our listeners, want to take. Joining us this morning is my good buddy from Merrillville, Indiana, Pastor Rick Boschhoven of Trinity Memorial Lutheran Church. How are you, my friend? Wait, hang on. Well, now we can friend each other. Push the button and then it works.
That's how it goes.
Hey, how are you?
Well, I'm a little bit of pain this morning. I got an infection in my leg, so we're trying to nurse. It's just been one.
All right, I gotta ask.
I turn 50 and I fall apart.
Not thanks. I'm just a few months out from that myself. Thank you. I gotta ask, what were you doing?
Oh, not well. If we finally tracked it down, it's probably because one of the boats on the lake broke loose, and I went into the water to go rescue it. Now I do live on water, but pastors probably can't afford to live on water. So the water I live on is the color of coffee with the cream right above it.
Well, you know, that is probably the most creative way to get your ministry council to give you a raise that I've come across yet.
Well, when we were on vacation last week, we found a sign that says, if you're lucky enough to live on the lake, you're lucky enough.
Well, that is true. You've put up some pictures on Facebook. You've got some nice digs there up in Indiana.
The economy helped.
Yeah. Well, you know, it could be worse. Could be Chicago.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But there was a... I had picked up a case of poison ivy, which, because I thought I was immune, I think a scratch, between the scratch and the water, something happened.
You know, you better stop, because you're starting to sound like the ministry of Paul now.
Yeah.
All you need is a snake bite, and you'll be complete.
Oh, yeah, well, as long as I survive it.
Well, God will provide. So what is going on in Indiana these days? What is the hot topic of the good folks at Trinity?
Well, we just finished Taste of Trinity. It was an outreach, more high visibility that we did, where we had several of our members provide foods of one sort or another, and we set up a tent on the property and invited people to come in for a taste and see that the Lord is good. It might be pushing that text a little too far to apply it that way. But
well, if it works, it works.
But it was a nice way of getting people. And for our very first Taste of Trinity, it went rather well, in spite of the fact that it rained.
Hey, let me start you out with something that came up during the Bible study yesterday as we finished up Ezra. I don't know if you had a chance to listen in or not, but the subject came up. Somehow it turned to how we present ourselves before the pagans as representing, you know, what we think of God, and in turn influencing what they may think about God. And the conversation turned to how people dress to come to church today. We weren't talking about, you know, the occasional blue jean thing, but we were talking about dressing like you're going out dancing Saturday night. That much of an issue up in Indiana? You pretty modest folks up there?
Not often. Oh, no, I wouldn't say.
Not often.
I wouldn't say modest per se. It is an interesting culture, though. So culturally, there's a dress code for Northwest Indiana that probably is a little different than, let's say, Northwestern Michigan. So, you know, So it's taken me a little bit to kind of get used to it.
Well, what's the distinction?
Oh, I suppose the frequency of tattoos.
Well, I mean, since you said you had a public event and you were out there, putting Trinity Memorial Lutheran Church out for the public to taste and see, I thought I might ask about this. So what do people think about Trinity when they come to visit?
Well, I think the feedback that I get from our visitors is we're actually a pretty welcoming congregation. Applying hospitality this way, it just seemed like a natural fit.
So do you think it's a bad thing that a Christian would get a tattoo? Does it matter? Can we get really legalistic today?
Yeah, throw the tattoo thing at me again. Again.
Again.
Came up once before, and I suppose my bias against them was revealed. But since having an opportunity to think about it, I don't honestly know. It does seem to me that there's some Old Testament prohibition against, painting your bodies. But I'm just really unclear on that, honestly. Honestly.
I'm not doubting you. I'm just giving you time to speak.
Yeah. I guess that's where it kind of goes. I'm unclear on whether or not it should be okay. I suppose there's enough of my father's not wanting them. But of course, for example, my own son, knowing my bias against them and his, went and got actually a very nice one, a beautiful anchor with his grandfather's birth and death date on his leg. That's sort of the new way of honoring a loved one now, is to get them tattooed upon us.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah, and I said, honestly, Ben, this was your way of honoring your grandfather, and I appreciate that. I'm just not so sure your grandfather.
Well, I made mention of this during the study of Ezra, and there is something to be said for Frank Sinatra theology.
What's that?
I did it my way.
I did it my way, yeah.
You know, it doesn't really much matter what God thinks. I'll do it my way. It doesn't matter what Grandpa might have thought. I'll do it my way. I don't care what my pastor says. I'll do it my way.
Yeah, that's true. And there was a certain, for me, I remember at one point I guess it was in the 80s, I wanted an earring, bad, at least one, maybe more, And my father, even then, told me, quite frankly, no, you're not getting one. And I wasn't a young man at that time either. I was old enough to have, be married and have my own family. And Dad was still telling me no, and I still listened.
Well, yeah, I have a very simple reason for not doing either one of those things.
What's that?
They hurt.
That's a good one.
They hurt. I know. Well, I am, when it comes to pain, I'm a weenie. I want nothing to do with anything that's going to cause intentional pain to me. The unintentional stuff is bad enough.
Yeah. I don't want to judge it and make it sound judgmental. I will say it is not for me. My goodness.
I mean, we live in a judgmental world.
I'm sure I have plenty of people in my congregation with tattoos, so I don't think this is a make it or break it thing.
No, I'm just kind of curious.
I'm expressing my own personal feelings toward them.
Yeah.
Or I guess if that's cool for you, I guess it's cool for you. It's
Is this something that you might theologically refer to as adiaphora? Does it make a difference one way or the other?
Well, I suppose since I'm going to rely on my absolute ignorance on this in terms of a theological answer, to say probably yes. So, and not make a big deal out of it. But now I'm beginning to realize I'm going to have to look into this.
Well, if I would refer you to...
My goodness, I'm pretty sure there's probably some pastors with tattoos. So,
yeah, as a matter of fact, there's a fellow, I cannot remember his name, is a chaplain in prison ministry. Mm-hmm. And it's actually a gateway for him. It buys him some credibility with the guys in the big house, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I would think that there are... So I'm going to say, yeah, it's out of Afrin. and probably not.
Well, let's move into a subject that's more along the lines of Pastor Rick Boshoven.
Okay.
Let me start you out with this. All right, back into happy waters. Machine Gun Preacher movie post... Machine Gun Preacher movie poster sparks mixed reactions. Have you heard about this film?
Which one?
Gerard Butler, Machine Gun Preacher.
Machine Gun Preacher.
It's a new movie that's coming out. Coming to theaters next month, Machine Gun Preacher is a movie that will appeal to some Christians because of its subject matter. It will also turn some Christians off because of its subject matter. The movie, in limited release on September 23rd, is based on the true story of Sam Childers, a drug-dealing, hell-raising teenager who, as a young man, began to turn his life around after finding Jesus. Today, he spends much of his time in the Sudan and neighboring countries, allegedly, you know, fighting pockets of the Lord's Republican Army, which is a Muslim army in the Sudan from the north, with his own brand of gun-toting rebels, while sweeping up orphans that have been left behind and then putting them into orphanages that he has built in the area. This is coming... This is Gerard Butler. This is the Look at My Six-Pack 300 Spartans Gerard Butler.
Oh. I'm intrigued now.
It's supposed to be based on a true story.
Oh. Well, we were... The FOBs up in this area here, we were talking about maybe trying an approach to mission, which is where we rent a movie theater and rent the movie, and it's much less expensive for us if we rent one in-house, and we do sort of a Bible study, watch the movie and do a Bible study afterwards. So that might be intriguing. We were looking for a movie.
And for those who are,
isn't it?
for those who may not be initiated, what the FOB is?
The Friends of Boshoven.
Friends of Boshoven, dubbed by me on Studio A.
And a contingent that includes Tim Engel and Gary Nagy and whatnot. So.
Now the story goes on. It says some Christians will love the film for showing Childers' path from rebellion to redemption. Okay, nothing wrong with that. Would you agree? Good subject for a Christian film.
Yeah.
All right. Others may avoid it for the same reason. The first 15 to 20 minutes are as in-your-face and gritty as anything you'll see in any R-rated movie, which is adults without the benefit of marriage, we'll just put it that way, drug dealing and taking, brutal violence, and foul language. Even after Childers, played effectively by Gerard Butler, finds God, he's still got some rough edges, and his flaws stick with him through the rest of the movie. Now, in using the Boshoven metric for a good story,
yeah,
there is a lot of stuff there that you maybe could use for a good Bible study.
I think.
About finding God and how does that change you? Should it change you? How are you a new creature in Christ? You know, life is a life of repentance.
Because in light of our previous conversation, this movie rather appeals to me, and someone might say, you would condemn body art, but you would not condemn this.
Welcome to the distinctly Lutheran perspective on life.
No. Well, welcome to what I think C.S. Lewis referred to as taste. That he says it's not a crime not to like somebody. It's a sin not to love them, but not to like them. It's sort of like a preference between. Some people just, they don't like broccoli,
Sure.
Right? They don't like broccoli. It's not to their taste. For me, tattoos certainly are not to my taste, but a gritty movie might be. Depending on the movie, and this one sounds intriguing.
505-7850-1800-730-2727. Or KFUO at KFUO.org. If you have a question or a comment, we're on Machine Gun Preacher. You can call or ask any question or make any comment that you like. Yesterday, we did cause a bit of a stir with some conversation about how people dress coming to church and how that may have, the standards may have slipped off. We're talking about films. We can go anywhere that you like. Sticking with this movie for a moment, Pastor Boshoven, when it raises the issue about what happens when someone becomes a Christian. Someone who is living a completely reprobate life comes to Christ, but for some reason there isn't this miraculous night and day change in them. They still exhibit, like this promo says, some of their old habits, their old bad habits, even though now they've found God. How is that possible? I thought when you were a new creation in Christ, everything got better.
Well, it does sound similar to St. Paul's complaint, then, doesn't it? Right? The good I would do, I do not do, and the evil I would not do, I still do. Some things just seem difficult for us to get rid of. So whatever this thorn in Paul's side was, in terms of choices and behaviors and sin, he had a struggle with that all the time. So I guess that shouldn't be too unusual a condition for a Christian, right?
Because when you see someone who is in the faith fall, especially someone publicly, maybe even a pastor.
Yes.
You know, we shouldn't be shocked, but yet we still are.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're right. We shouldn't be shocked, and yet we still are, because there's a standard we set for them. There's a scene in the movie Batman Beyond. It's the next movie with Two-Face in it. There's an argument between Gordon, Commissioner Gordon, and Two-Face about you were supposed to be the best of us, and if you fall, that will cause other people to fall, and so they have to make Batman into the Dark Knight. That's the movie, Batman Dark Knight. Because Batman has to take that sin upon himself, Harvey's sin upon himself, because Harvey shouldn't be allowed to fall. He's got to remain the good guy. Otherwise, other people will be led to follow his example, I suppose. But that's a real heartfelt, heart-wrenching scene where Commissioner Gordon is just struggling with, you were the... He was supposed to be. He was the best of us,
Yeah.
We don't like to see the best fall. But my goodness, Satan fell, and Satan was supposedly, he was the archangel, the highest of the high. And we've also seen usually when the highest of the high fall, they usually fall to the lowest of the low.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Let's grab our first call from Pastor Hendrick down in Perryville. How are you, Pastor? Thanks for calling in.
Hey, I'm doing well. How are you, Roland?
I am good. You're on with Pastor Boshoven. Go ahead.
Yes, well, this is kind of rehashing. I just heard you mention that yesterday there was some discussion about how people dress for church these days. Is it okay to go back? I didn't hear it yesterday.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
yes, sir.
Absolutely.
Okay. Two comments. First, well, probably more than that. This has been a big topic in our elders' meetings here down here in Perryville. Great concern over the way people are dressing from a couple of different perspectives, and in fact, they even addressed it in a sermon some weeks ago, and indirectly in my sermon this past weekend. The big concern, quite frankly, is not what people are wearing or not wearing in some cases, but rather why am I dressing the way I'm dressing? Am I dressing to please and honor God, or am I dressing simply for my own personal comfort, convenience, or what have you? And then secondly, this past Sunday I addressed the issue of distractions. I didn't bring a direct relationship into dress, but indirectly I did. I believe sometimes we forget that how we dress, and I'm going to pick on the females here, tops that are cut too low, bottoms that are cut too high, become a distraction to the worshiping community. Just a couple of comments, and I'll just sit back and listen to you.
All right. Thank you, Pastor Hendrick. Rick, go ahead.
Well, I think in terms of distraction, I do counsel my when I go with my confirmants, for example, and we are learning to come to the altar rail for the Lord's Supper and whatnot. There's the you know, the view that the pastor gets and doesn't necessarily need down the tops of blouses. And if the blouses are a little too open, there's a little too much view. And nobody, you know, we don't need that, especially not at the Lord's table. So modesty is preferable, so that there aren't those kinds of distractions. The other thing, though, is culture has changed, and what people consider to be formal dress today is not, it would not have been considered formal before. I'll give you an example. You know, when my father passed away, you know, my brother didn't have a suit for the funeral. He doesn't own one. He doesn't need one. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, you know, was it going to be okay if Jack just wore what considered to be formal wear, you know, in Midwest Michigan, which was, slacks and a sweater? You know, because that's as formal as it gets. You know, and in other places that, you know, that certainly just, that wouldn't pass for code. But one wonders what, you know, where the borders of casual are. In Northwest Indiana, I would have to say that people, at least here at Trinity, dress what I would have considered several years ago to be, you know, sort of Friday casual.
Yeah.
You know, casual Friday wear. But if you were to kind of run into them where they're, you know, really on a Saturday weekend, that, you know, they dress much more casual than that. It provides an interesting debate. There was a point at which, when I was at my former congregation, there was a movement among some in the congregation to require all the elders to wear black alts. That's kind of like what a pastor wears, except instead of being white, it's black.
Yeah.
And that way it covers whatever it is that they're wearing that day and kind of raises the bar, at least for people on that side of communion rail. I noticed nobody was particularly interested in arguing with one other side of the communion rail was wearing, but they wanted to make sure that their leadership was at least living up to what they wanted. And it was especially aimed at one particular elder who, on some Sundays, not everyone, but on some Sundays would, you know, especially during the summer, would wear shorts. And then they just didn't appreciate that. But he saw no problem with it. So then it comes down to a personal preference question, then, doesn't it? Am I wearing this to honor the Lord, or am I wearing this to honor me? Well, shouldn't that be the question we ask every day, not just Sunday, since every day is the Sabbath?
Well, isn't that the question we should ask about all that we do?
Yeah, right. And in which case is this? But there are God-pleasing actions that take place in our homes that don't necessarily take place at the altar rail, do they? So that's part of the struggle, is when is it appropriate?
Pastor Rick Boshoven is our guest this morning on the Ask the Pastor portion of the program. David and Elaine, stay on hold. We will be right back to you after these messages. Elaine, you'll be first up. Get ready. The Bible study continues in just a moment.
I've heard business people complain that nonprofits don't respond in timely ways to needs and opportunities. I believe that's true. Concordia Seminary strives to instill responsiveness in our graduates. Responsiveness to the needs of congregations and responsiveness to the needs of our communities and world. Responsiveness is a seminary core value, and it's a Great Commission value.
Every family struggles with the relationships between parents and children at some point, but it's especially challenging when you're a blended family. In the new book, We're Not Blended, We're Pure Reed, Diana Lucier Brandmeier and Marty Lindfett detail a survivor's guide to blended families. You'll learn Diana's story, a path that she and her husband Ed have traveled on their blended family journey. It could be similar to yours. We're not blended, we're Pure Read, published by CPH.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Sex selection abortion has long been a problem, especially in China and India, where boys are highly preferred. The number of aborted baby girls is staggering when compared with boys. But make no mistake, sex selection abortion is also practiced in the U.S. Now a testing kit will make more girls vulnerable to being killed. Technology has enabled a lab to accurately test for the sex of the child as early as 8 weeks after conception. Aborting a baby at any stage is tragic, but if they want a boy and find out it's a girl early in pregnancy, more will likely abort the baby and start over. Once this Pandora's box is opened, there's no closing it. It would be impossible to control. Technology isn't always a good thing. Leave the gender up to God.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.
Liberty in Libya. I'm Steve Coleman with today's Religion Roundup. The overthrow of Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi is spurring hopes for religious liberty in the Muslim nation. Todd Nettleton of Voice of the Martyrs says converting Libyans to Christianity has been illegal under Gaddafi, under the new regime.
We hope there is some type of religious freedom, at least the acknowledgement that Libyans can be something besides Muslim. They could be Christian.
The scout troop at Lutheran Church of Our Redeemer in Kokomo, Indiana, is planning a memorial for scout leader Arthur Anderson. Authorities say Anderson was leading two boys on a hike when a man emerged from a nearby home and stabbed him to death. Assistant Scoutmaster Alan Harvath says that while the scouts were unhurt,
the boys were right there when this happened, so the trauma they're dealing with, I think we're all praying for their ability to deal with it, and we're praying for, obviously, Art and his family.
A 22-year-old man was arrested and charged with murder. I'm Steve Coleman.
KFUO Radio salutes our day's sponsor on this Tuesday, August 23rd, 2011. Today's day sponsors are anonymous. Today's day sponsor has made a contribution to KFUO Radio anonymously. Once again, we say thank you to today's KFUO Radio day sponsor, a day sponsor that has chosen to remain anonymous.
We offer a wealth of audio resources at KFUO.org. You can download podcasts of entire programs like The Bible Study, Studio A, Law and Gospel, and Wrestling with the Basics. You can also download segments of Morning Essentials and short-form programs like The Meyer Minute, By the Way, and Front Porch Parenting with Dr. Mary Mance Simon. KFUO podcasts are just a click away. Visit KFUO.org or subscribe through iTunes.
Good morning. Welcome back. This is the Ask the Pastor portion of the Bible study. If you're just tuning in, Paul and I did a little switch around this morning. Pastor John Lukomsky was in for the Bible study. Those two guys work so well together. It's hard to deny them the opportunity to do yet one more program. So I'm doing the Ask the Pastor portion today. I'm back tomorrow at 10 for the Bible study. And please don't forget, there's also that Studio A program that comes on at 4 o'clock and goes till 6. Our good Lutheran talk continues all through the day here, as well as after this program, you get Moments of Assurance with Pastor Mark Hawkinson. You don't want to miss that as well. Now, being true to my word and my form, Pastor Rick Boshoven of Trinity Memorial Lutheran Church in Maryville, Indiana, we go right back to the phones, and first up is Elaine. Elaine, thank you for being patient. Go ahead.
Good morning to both of you. And my question is, I'm going to tell you so you'll know. As my children grew, and when they were confirmed, of course, they got a Bible. Now, one of your pastors was talking on your program, and he said, my first book was a Bible, and my second book was The Pride of Something by C.F. Lewis. And I wanted to get them that book, but I don't know the rest of the title.
Pastor Boshoven, can you help?
Pardon?
What was it again?
The Pride of Something by C.F. Lewis.
The Pride of Something.
And it was the second book that the pastor had gotten, and he was he really got a lot out of it. I thought I'd like to give that to my youngsters.
Boy, that that's not ringing a bell with me at all. And I know most of.
Well, as a pastor, what would be a good one of his if you don't know that exact title?
Oh, of C.S. Lewis's works?
Well,
it all depends. Do you want something theological or something fictional Christian?
Oh, dear. I thought, well, if he got that, I should get that for my kids.
Well,
just
doing a quick look on the web here, I found a couple of references to Mere Christianity as having a lot to say about pride.
Yeah, he writes on pride in Mere Christianity. As a matter of fact, I think that's what I quoted from earlier.
And what was it?
When I quoted C.S. Lewis earlier about not liking somebody, but you do have to love them.
Yeah.
I think that's on his chapter on love. He's got like three chapters on love in Mere Christianity, and it's in one of them, and I can't remember which. I'm tethered by a heating pad today, and I can't reach my copy.
But now the one that you might recommend then.
I'm kind of a bizarre fan of either The Great Divorce, which is kind of like it's sort of a bus ride to heaven, and somebody kind of gets to see sort of the front porch of heaven kind of a thing. What's the Screwtape Letters, which is written from an entirely different perspective. It's written from one demon writing to another demon, and the demon who's being written to, it's his job to keep this one mortal being from becoming a Christian.
Oh, all right.
And it gives you insight into, in a sense, how the devil looks at you and how he throws obstacles in your way. And the book is helpful in the sense that you can kind of see when things are going wrong in your life, you know, what the devil's doing to you, how the devil's leading you away from God. So it's a disturbing book because it's a conversation between demons, but it's a helpful book in the sense that it helps you see that unseen world a little bit clearer.
And what is the name of that one?
And that's, what did I just say it was?
The Screwtape Letters.
The Screwtape Letters,
so
yeah.
You've got three good ones here, Elaine. You've got The Screwtape Letters.
Oh, The Screwtape.
Letters, right.
Let me write these. I'm writing them down.
Okay, yep. The Screwtape Letters. The Great Divorce.
Yes.
And Mere Christianity.
Yeah. Mere. That was the last one.
Right.
Yeah, M-E-R-E. And I think that's actually really...
Oh, M-E-R-E.
Right,
yeah,
Mere Christianity, sure. Right.
Yeah, like in I don't know, in the word, like in the word merely. Mere Christianity.
Yeah, mere.
As if
M-E-R-E.
It was.
Yeah. Mere Christianity.
Yeah, and I think that's actually a pretty good systematic book for your kind of basic Christian.
All right, thank you for the call. We appreciate it. Let's go to David. You've been very patient. Thanks for waiting. You're on with Pastor Boshoven. Go ahead.
Thank you, sir. Just a question and a comment. Well, back in the late 60s, around 1970, I was in high school, and I used to get actually suspended for my hair being, like, in the middle of my ear. Yeah, I guess we had a dress code, and I was aware, even back then, I told the principal, you're suspending me for a few days because of my hair, but you allow these girls in our school to wear sharp mini skirts. And I was brazen enough to tell the principal, you say my hair disrupts the class, but these girls in mini skirts don't. And I figured maybe you like that, but you don't like them, like the hair. And needless to say, he got pretty ticked off at me.
Well, yeah, because it's hard to deal with the truth.
Yeah. And I touched my comment, and then my question is, how come the Lutheran Church does not have deacons in it? And I'll just listen off the air.
All All right, well, thank you for your patience, David. We appreciate the call. Go ahead, Pastor.
Okay. Well, in addressing the question, the first part of the question about sort of the enforcement of the rules in an institution, the church is an institution, and at one time it was an institution that was strong enough and universal enough to be able to dictate dress code. It's no longer that kind of an institution anymore. It cannot do that. And if it tries, all it's going to do is drive people out of the church. I'm very afraid of that. If this is all about Jesus, but you're making this all about my hair or the fact that I'm wearing sandals, you know, we have a problem. You know, I don't need that kind of judgment coming from you. I'll take it from God, but I won't take it from you. And then we end up driving them out of church. So, sorry about that.
Is that your Superman themed ringtone?
That's my cell phone. And no, that's actually a TV theme from something. So, anyhow, addressing the other side of the question, though, which is escaping me because I got distracted by the darn phone. Oh, we were talking about
deacons. Why does the Lutheran Church not have deacons? We do have deaconesses.
Well, we have. Boy, that's a hard one to say because...
Well, what is a deacon? Start there.
Well, I think that's part of our problem that we have is being able to define between the term elder and deacon. I was at a congregation where we had both elders and deacons, and elders were really different than what deacons did, except that when you really examined them, they weren't, and so they ended up getting rid of the deacons as a title and just left it as elders. But I would say probably that what in other denominations they refer to as deacons are probably the role of similar role held by what we call elders today. But in some congregations, like the one I'm in, when I arrived here, I didn't have a board of elders anymore. I had a board of lay ministers. Because I think the idea was to redefine, nobody understood what an elder was, or an elder sounded like some old guy when they wanted, you know, and to call it more what it was. So, but it's been hard for me to lose the term elder because I understand it differently. So.
Well, I'm, you know,
I'm coming back to that idea that a deacon is in some churches are what we would call elders, and that there isn't maybe a lot of difference then.
Well, sticking with the idea of what an elder is or is not, mm-hmm. and the term, see, this goes to how you said cultures change, and language changes, and words okay. that you know in the King James Bible had meaning at one time that are complete mysteries to people today. Mm-hmm. Which is why I have these different translations of Scripture. The elder, though, is it really the term, or is it the function of the position? Because I would think, just let me bounce this at you real quick.
Yeah.
I would think if you ask the average Lutheran what an elder does in their congregation, the answer you would probably get is they're the attendance police.
Ah, okay. The way I tend to see elders in most Lutheran congregations are the folks that are communion assistants.
Okay, good.
You know, sometimes they're communion assistants and ushers, but they don't do much necessarily other than that in many congregations. There's not an active ministry that they have going on after the Sunday morning service is over, right? So it seems like they're mostly concerned with Sunday morning service and not much after that. In, I wouldn't say all Lutheran congregations, but in probably many, right?
Yes, I would go with you on that.
Yeah, and so that was one of the reasons that the thinking was is that we want to change the term elder to fit the job description, which is lay ministry. and so that they're doing work beyond the for the congregation, beyond the Sunday morning service.
505-7850-1-800-730-2727. Also, KFUO at KFUO.org. If you want to email in a question or a comment, plenty of time left. You can still get in. You know, let's pay a couple of moments more attention to something you said a moment ago, Pastor Boshoven, about people leaving the church. Now, this is datelined today out of the Christian Post. Working class whites not so faithful in church attendance. Now, this kind of goes to the myth that's being put out today that the people that go to church are undereducated, lower class people, and all the smart ones are off doing other things on Sunday morning. It has long been accepted wisdom that less educated working class white Americans are the nation's most faithful churchgoers. However, a study released Sunday at the American Sociological Association's annual convention dispels that widely held perception. Over the past four decades, monthly church attendance by moderately educated whites, defined as those with high school diplomas and maybe some college, has declined to 37% from 50% of the population, according to the study. Church attendance by the least educated whites, defined as those lacking high school diplomas, fell to 23% from 38%. What particularly is surprising, the authors of the study said, is that church attendance actually is more frequent among more educated whites than those with less education. This research found that...
Daring admit that.
Pardon me?
Somebody's daring to admit to that.
Yeah. Their research found that 46% of the college-educated attended church at least once a month in the 2000s, which is only slightly less than 51% four decades ago.
Mm-hmm.
Now, first off, it startles me that we're still assessing church attendance by race in this day and age.
Oh, yeah.
But I kind of wondered if maybe there wasn't a little bit of a political element to this kind of a study, going right at sort of the whole political evangelical movement in the United States.
Well, that's the area I was more or less picking up on, because it's always seemed wrong to me that, because as I looked at the membership in the congregations that I've served, the most loyal in attendance were the better educated. If I was to make such a distinction, and I am, so I guess they did.
Okay.
So, but it always, as I look at most congregations, at least in the area that I live in, the Michigan, Indiana area where I'm most familiar, I would say that's the case. So I've always been confused by this. Unless it's that way amongst the evangelicals, and I just don't know. I mean, but I would think that amongst the Lutherans and the Methodists and the Roman Catholics and whatnot, that they would be seeing pretty much the same things that I see. It's that, you're the people that are the driving, motivating forces behind your congregation are not bumpkins.
You know, as Dr. Jeff Gibbs here at Concordia Seminary St. Louis often says, you have to seek out what the presuppositions are. And let me read you the title of this research paper. No Money, No Honey, No Church, The Deinstitutionalization of Religious Life Among the White Working Class.
Money, no honey, no what?
No church.
No church.
And it says... The authors attribute this dichotomy, that is, that they we don't go to church, but we can actually break it out by class and race in different numbers. They say this dichotomy, this deteriorating labor market, this moderately educated class, and these cultural changes that have been making non-marital family forms more acceptable is what's driving that distinction. So if you're educated, you are more likely to be married. You are more likely to have a complete, intact family.
Right.
You are more likely to attend church together, eat meals together, all those things that like Focus on the Family talks about.
Yep.
But if you tend to be poorer, you tend not to be married. You tend to have more children out of wedlock. You tend to have more of a fractured family life. And that, in turn, perhaps is why they aren't going to church. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly right. So, you know, I would be in agreement with that. And at the risk of sounding like Rush Limbaugh, who I don't dislike, I do listen to on occasion, the observation that it seems to be the liberals that focus on race and economic status and whatnot, and that seems to be holding true here too, with the presupposition that that's what we're going to look at.
It also made me wonder if perhaps Christianity had, in some forms at least, you seem to have these polar opposites of traditional Orthodox church bodies like the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and then you have the large non-denominational evangelical type churches on the other side. This is going to be hard to say, but I'm just going to throw it out there for the sake of discussion because I don't know. Has Christianity become too cerebral? Is it only possible to attract people with some education who want to know about things like Latin and Greek and ancient fathers? And can the church still speak to people that are not coming and bring them back in?
Well, that is interesting, because that's another one of my little pet distinctions is when I was in high school, I had an opportunity to study biology down in Costa Rica. And while I was running around the jungles of Costa Rica, I met a guy there that kind of put his finger on it, you know. I'm coming back to the bonfire one night wanting to do some real science, and since we had a pig roast that night, I said, why don't we do a dissection on the pig's head and see all the parts and all of that kind of stuff. And he says, you know, Boshoven, there are two kinds of scientists in the world. He said, there are lumpers and there are splitters, and you, Boshoven, are a splitter. And I have taken that to mean a lot of things. There are people who kind of look at the world and want to lump it all together, and there are people that want to split it all apart. And as I've gotten more and more into this thinking, I realize that there are head people and there are heart people, and the head people tend to be splitters, and the heart people tend to be lumpers. And I've also begun to notice that pastors tend to be head people, and our members tend to be heart people. And sometimes we talk past each other. And so I have to learn to be, in my conversation, more of a heart guy. You know? Because there are people, if you want to get through to them, you got to hit them in the heart, right?
Yeah, sure.
Aim for the heart, Ramon. Aim, yeah. You remember that scene from Dirty Harry? Aim for the heart. You know?
Yeah.
Not Dirty Harry. Yeah, it was for a few dollars more or something. It was Fistful of Dollars.
Fistful of Dollars, you're right, yeah.
Yeah.
Clint Eastwood was in there somewhere. Let's bring Herman in on this. Herman, good morning. You're on with Pastor Boshoven. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. Yes, Pastor Boshoven. I was just going to make this comment, and my evidence is only anecdotal personal observation. But on those surveys about the more college-educated going to church versus those who aren't, I'd make this comment, that it is that more and more people in the last several decades have gone to college than ever before. And a lot of those people, I know in the local church I'm in, we've had young people go to college whose parents never did, and they still come to church, the children do, who've been college-educated. Also, when I've listened to what's called evangelical Christian radio, the surprising number of men and women on there have a degree of some kind. So there have been certainly evangelical Christian colleges out there, as well as, you know, the Concordia system of the Missouri Synod. So take that background in there, too. And that wasn't mentioned in that survey. So the perspective needs to be looked at a little wider, I think.
You know, that's an excellent comment.
Absolutely agree with you. Absolutely, I agree with you on that. Is that it's far broader. It's not one or the other splitting. It's a broad based thing, lumping, and to try to and sometimes splitting things apart is a helpful thing to do. But sometimes there's an agenda behind the splitting to deconstruct something to the point where it can't function anymore, or you can devalue it, or dehumanize it, or de-church it. And that's where the heart's got to kind of hold this thing together.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you.
Good comments, Herman. Thank you. Appreciate the call, as always. Create in me a clean heart, O God. That's what comes to mind when you were saying that.
Yeah. And I also remember what's the love the Lord your God with what?
All your heart.
Yeah, all your
mind.
Yeah. So it's the whole package. It isn't just one or the other. And the heart doesn't go anywhere without the head, and the head doesn't live without the heart.
Yes, but there are at least six Korean scientists working on that right now.
Yeah, I suppose so.
Kim Il-jong will live forever.
Well, we're moving that way. I mean, and what was the science scare in the 50s was all about nuclear and radiation. The movement we have now is toward dehumanization and becoming, the machines taking over.
Well, actually, it's two things. It's transhumanism, and I've got a story here that we can wrap up the last 2 minutes on real quick.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw the picture of this. I found it on WorldNet Daily. I know it was on the Drudge Report, some other places. There is something that is actually an implantable epidermal electronic system, an EES. It looks about the size of a postage stamp. It's implanted in the skin, and it consists of circuits which could contain electrodes to measure brain, heart, and muscle activity, transmitting data wirelessly. Essentially, talk about the mark of the beast. Wow. But this is how you can put a control chip into people. And it's actually reality. It shows a real working product installed on a person.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, science fiction is we've been watching it over the last, 50 years, fulfilling, the TV show that was on about, how Leonard Shatner changed the world, or how Star Trek changed the world?
Yeah.
Scientists that have invented the cellular phones and all of that kind of stuff. You'll remember that they kind of flipped open the flip phone?
Yes.
That was based on the communicators from Star Trek. and it, not just coincidentally, they verified that it was by the people who created them. I'm watching the commercial on TV where they got some guy in an African setting dancing around in a basket suit, and then they're going, see, this looks remarkably like a space suit, so aliens came and influenced our culture.
Eric Von Däniken, call your office.
Yeah, right. Yeah. There's no verification for that. There is verification for the cell phone looking.
Well, Pastor Boshoven, we appreciate you stepping in this morning and filling in some good conversation, good comments from our listeners.
Always cares me, Ben.
Yeah, and I would commend as a resource. I know that Paul also uses the Christian Post and Christian News Headlines and some of the other sources that are out there for news that is of importance to the church. So we take it as it comes. And Pastor, you did a fine job. Thank you. Now get healthy.
God bless everyone.
Get yourself well.
Well, we're trying.
And stop going out in the swamp. I don't care if you want to call it a lake or not. I know it sounds fancy. Stay out of the swamp. All the best.
I'll try.
Bye. All right. Mark Hawkinson, Pastor Mark Hawkinson with Moments of Assurance coming up next on KFUO Radio. KFUO Radio is a broadcast ministry of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.
Listen Monday through Friday at this same time on The Bible Study. The Bible Study is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for The Bible Study to continue. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can contact us on the web at kfuo.org. Download programs from the Bible Study archives at kfuo.org. The Bible Study is underwritten by Concordia Seminary, St. Louis.